Systems work. People fail. Welcome to InsureMark's Advisor Mentorship Podcast with Vice President Jeremy Hauser, where we share proven systems and processes for the 21st century advisor. Today, it's essential that advisors find a way to differentiate themselves from the competition. Learn how to elevate your game and accomplish incredible feats as Jeremy teaches you how to build a more successful and sustainable business while realizing a better work-life balance is not only possible, but achievable.
Our guest today is a United States Military Academy graduate who left the Army as a captain and has been an advisor ever since. He founded Mansky Wealth Management in 2012 and since then has published two books, The Prepared Investor and also Outsmart the Money Magician. One thing to note about our guest today is in 2023, so last year, his team was ranked on Advisor Hub magazine's list of the fastest growing wealth management firms in the U.S. and number three in Texas. Texas is pretty big, so that was pretty eye-opening. And I'd like to also give a huge welcome to our guest today, which is none other than founder Chris Mansky of Mansky Wealth Management. How are we doing today, Chris?
Doing really great and happy to be on the show with you here, Jeremy. Thank you.
No, thank you for your time today and very interesting. So we are relatively new. We've been communicating back and forth over the last couple of months and your team reached out and I thought you'd be a great opportunity for some advisors to hear from a successful advisor like yourself and your team. Would you mind sharing with the audience a little bit about yourself and your company down here in Houston?
Well, to add to the introduction you just made, while I was at the wirehouse, I was tagged because of my growth being pretty high across the board for their national standards. And they asked me to lead a training team. And I traveled the country. I spoke with thousands of advisors, helping them to begin and grow a world-class wealth management practice. And then I started my own group, as you'd mentioned, in 2012. And you know, we've just really just been moving in the right direction ever since.
Yeah, and that's where what your team sent over to me, and I thought it was a very eye-popping list because, you know, you see several, I mean, there's thousands of RIAs across the country and hundreds of thousands that are probably in just the state of Texas alone. So to be number three on a list of one of the fastest growing RIAs. So what do you attribute some of that success to and what got y'all the opportunity to be awarded that last year?
I really attribute it to the systems that we've put in place here at the firm. And the way to think of that is I wrote the book Outsmart the Money Magicians and McGraw-Hill published it because there's some real low-hanging fruit that it's easy to pick and improve Wall Street and really improve finance for everyone. And so in a way, my financial company is like an experiment in real life with those concepts. And you know, the experiment really is showing that clients, they can tell the difference when the system is for them or against them. And when it's for them, they love it. And it's, I really attribute just the lack of the conflicts of interest and the basic systemic biases that are just so prevalent on Wall Street. And a lot less of the benefit or the credit would go to me personally, but just to the way we play the game.
I don't know if you know, but the theme here is obviously systems and processes for the 21st century advisor. So it's interesting that you shared that where a lot of the advisors that are really focused in on hyper growth for their business model, not just a couple years ago, but especially this year and the years moving forward, they really do need people, process, and systems in place. So one thing that stuck out to me when we were chatting a little bit before we went live was a phrase you used where you talked about failing loudly. So obviously systems in place is very strong, but over the last 12 years of Mansky Wealth Management, what does that phrase mean to you of failing loudly, or what have you had to overcome here over the last 12 years? Because you're not the only advisor in your firm, so you might share a little bit about your team.
When I say the phrase failing loudly, what I'm trying to describe is all of us here at the company, our willingness to be open and vocal with wherever we have missed the mark. And the reason it's good for us to do that is number one, it helps to give us a little bit more pressure. And this is on personal and professional avenues. It helps to give us a little more pressure from the people around us because they know where we've missed our marks. They know what we're aiming for. So we've got a little bit more support, a little bit more buy-in from the people around us on what we're trying to accomplish. And the next is that anybody who might be trying to do the same thing, they can avoid that problem. We can make life easier for them because they can learn through our misstep. And then that way they're faster to grow, faster to succeed, faster to get that fulfillment, you know, whatever path that, you know, that we're on. So when I say failing loudly, that's really the concept that I'm talking about.
So what were some of those, so over decade, so what were some of those big mistakes? Or if you could go back, is there anything that really stands out to you? So some of the biggest mistakes you learn from as your team continue to grow and not being the only advisor. So now being the founder, but having other people that report to you. Can you talk a little bit about the mistakes over 12 years?
I'll share a couple with you and we can dive even further because I've made a lot of them. The one would be that, you know, we're constantly trying to tell our clients to look at the charts and see beyond a straight line approach, you know, to look really at the curve. You know, if things are compounding, it's a curve that's hard to grasp. And so we show them these financial models. We put a lot of energy into showing them what's real. And then in the business, we had a moment where every seat that we had was filled and we were talking about hiring somebody else. And well, wait a minute, the straight line model that we had made for ourselves, like, oh, this is the path that we're on. It was really inadequate because the growth was very curved in the upward direction. And so we had to deal with not taking our own medicine because if we had modeled that better, we would have been a little better prepared for bringing in that next person when, you know, at the time we were kind of like, oh gosh, we need to get some more desks and computers. And where are we going to put these desks? You know, we just weren't really ready for it the way that I think we could have been. And then another example is as the advisors, each advisor is growing their practice, we've seen where the overall idea that I believe in is not always the best idea for each advisor. So my overall arching belief is let's bring in somebody that's different than me. And I'd say for the most part, that has been a wonderful idea for how to grow a team because, you know, you've got different ways that you complement each other. You can see things from different points of view. And so there's a strength from that diversity. But there are times when it's nice to bring in somebody that you just instantly click with, that there's so much similarity that there's no friction, there's no, and we kind of had to learn that the hard way where, you know, there was a moment where it's like, man, everybody is so different. We probably would benefit from one or two more voices that just coincide with somebody else. You know, hey, we've got, you know, person A here and nobody is like person A. Why don't we bring in another person like person A? At least they can, you know, they can collaborate a little bit without the need to convince and work so hard to understand. So, you know, hopefully that's a good open book, just trying to be transparent discussion of failing loudly.
Well, so go into that and we'll talk a little more about like staff and team, who all that entails, but going to one of the things you just mentioned, what came first? Was it revenue and opportunity? So now let's go ahead and put people in the right place and go find people and pay them well. Or was it, I can see this coming and you went and hired somebody, took a risk and hired them before maybe you weren't able to properly fund them or, you know, pay them what they may have been making? Or talk a little bit about that, because that seems to be a struggle for some advisors too, of I don't know if I'm there to hire somebody new or not.
Right. Well, for us, it's always been that the revenue comes first. We really live low on the hog. We're not flashy. We don't have an enormous rent in a fancy high rise. In fact, just the opposite. You know, we own the building that we're in and it's in, you know, a kind of an eclectic artsy part of Houston where, you know, there's a lot of creativity and also, you know, lower cost. So we just really live low on, you know, keep our expenses low so that we don't ever have any debt and don't have any weakness as far as, you know, financial goes. And when we see the need for somebody, it's because, well, the revenue is there it's driving that need, and then we'll fill it.
So speaking of your team, so who all does that consist of? So I know currently right now, so you're an RIA. Can you break down based on how many are in operations, how many are in sales for y'all's operation?
Yes. So we are two-thirds operation, one-third sales/advisor, and that's 4 and 8. So 4 on the advisor side and 8 on the operation side.
Nice. And so which, if you can take yourself back, starting out, was it just you and an assistant, or what was the model of, is it 2-to-1 sales, or how can you walk through the process of how you were hiring?
Sure. So when I first opened the firm, it was myself and my office manager. And what we did is we, for years, for maybe the first 5 or 6 years that we were in business, I was partnered real closely with the University of Houston, and I offered a summer leadership seminar. And so we had a group of anywhere from 6 to 12 interns every summer that they weren't there to help out the company. It was completely extracurricular. This was a real serious syllabus that we followed to provide them with leadership insight. And then from there, we'd help them to find jobs. On a rare occasion, they would see and have a desire to work with us. And so over time, we had back office and front office folks slowly fill roles. And then I'd say at about 5 years in, we started thinking about discontinuing that leadership seminar. And then 6 years in, we did. And now we're more traditional, just putting out the word that we have an opening and doing the interviews, that kind of thing.
Very helpful. So knowing that, it seems like the intern route worked really well, and then there was a opportunity to pivot from there, look somewhere else. Would you say, when you look at your team, and is there a certain like threshold of amount of assets? Because I think I saw somewhere, so a little over $500 million that y'all's team currently manages right now. Is that roughly the number?
And I think that's right. We're getting a little closer to $1 billion, but yeah, we're definitely over $500 million.
Well, that's a big jump, which is congratulations. Is there a certain threshold of once they got to this level, it was okay, now time to rev up and scale? Do you remember when that moment was of now having additionally 12 people to make up your firm?
I don't know that we had a moment where, oh, it's time to rev up. I think what we always try to do is stay focused on the client and make sure that the client is seeing the quality of interaction that they always have seen, that the client is seeing the quality of relationship with the advisors here that they've always seen. And so because of that, I almost think that instead of saying, oh, we've hit this level, it's time to level up or rev things going, it's more like, well, okay, so now we're going to just take another little step forward. We're going to take another little step forward, just bite off a little more that we know we can chew. And then we bite off a little more that we know we can chew. And so that's I'd say that's a more accurate depiction of the path.
I love that. So, and interesting you say it too, because it's more of a business decision, but it's coming from the client first, client-centered, seeing if there's a need, if there's something additional that you can add to benefit your customer. So if it involves a person, then you go out and look for that spot to be hired, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Yeah, I think that's the right way to say it. And just to be as open as I can, there have been moments where we've had some, you know, ego centric, oh gosh, look at this. And I remember us all kind of raising a glass and really being proud when we saw that in the Houston Business Journal, we were listed as, you know, the fourth or third here in Houston. And then like 2 weeks after that journal came out, they had a list of the banks, and you could look at the bottom three regional banks and combine all their assets together, and we still were larger. Wow. And that seemed like a real special moment. But as far as business operations and really doing what we do every day, it didn't change anything. It just was a moment of, my goodness, you know, like this is working.
Which is incredible. And so here's a part of the show that I think might surprise people, but that's why I'm very eager to have you on the show today, because I think it's a lot of people who listen to this podcast, a lot of them utilize insurance in their overall planning. So as of today, majority of what's your team, because we talked a little bit about this, you guys really specialize in a certain, I mean, it's a philosophy when people decide to move forward with you. So can you talk a little bit about maybe some of the conversations? Can you share with the listener, like, what y'all's process is when customers ask you guys about annuities or life insurance, or if it may make sense for their portfolio? Because your team currently doesn't utilize it, but you refer it out, right?
That is correct. Yeah. So this is something that I wrote about extensively in my latest book, Outsmart the Money Magicians, because it is a systemic weakness that the client understands when Wall Street says, hey, you can trust me to be an expert at investing, stocks, bonds, the basic investing world. I've got you covered. And you know what? I'm also an incredibly adept expert at all the different kinds of insurance products out there. Oh, and you know what? On top of that, I can also sell you a mortgage. And look, let's make sure that you got a checkbook, because I can handle your checkbook and your checking needs. And we'll get you a credit card too. I can do credit cards. You know, and the list goes on. I mean, this is truly a Wall Street norm when you're with the big nationwide brokerages. And it's a weakness, because the customer knows that it's impossible to be an expert and offer the very best in all of those incredibly different disciplines. They're each a different career. And so if any of your listeners, they are focused right now on just one part of the financial world, and they're thinking about adding in another, my experience suggests that you're better to not do that. Your clients and your colleagues will respect you and be more attracted to your offering when you're clearly in one lane, and this is something that you can talk to in depth. It's absolutely your expertise. What's more is that you can be in a kind of a moral high ground when it comes to taking care of the clients, because you can say, I'm not connected to any of these insurance providers in a meaningful way. I'm not, there's no contract. There's nothing in writing. I don't know these people that do mortgages. I don't know these people that do credit cards in a business standpoint, but I know them personally, and I see the work that they do for others, and I'd like to refer two or three of them to you. Mm-hmm. And then you can pick the one that feels the best to you. We are referring them because we think that they're the best of the best. And it really does elevate the service when you're, you know, working with clients that they have means and they have some real success that they want to take care of. They want to conserve their wealth. They really appreciate that. When people are saying, oh, I just want the one-stop shop, just save me some time, just do it all. Usually those folks, in our experience, they're the second, third generation. They're the folks that they don't really as much have the expertise or have the, you know, the skin in the game that someone who is a producer who, you know, they started the company, when they sold it, they had this enormous windfall, and it means a lot to them to hold on to that wealth. They respond well to somebody who is not a jack of all trades.
A lot to digest on that. Very good advice, because I think for a listener, so although we do have a lot of advisors that possibly listen to this that do currently recommend, maybe they do AUM as an RIA, and then they also do insurance. But some in over the last, I'd say 18 months, we've had a lot of advisors similar to y'all's firm though, where RIAs that are currently not offering insurance, but they're looking for what's a good solution for that. So what advice would you give them, and what's worked with you guys with y'all's processes when customers are looking for annuities or life insurance, more protection? And for the most part, if that is what they want, so how does y'all's team currently work with those consumers and refer business out who's not offering those products?
Yeah. So if they're not offering it and they're wanting to be sure that when the need arises, they've got good folks, I think the first step is get out in the community, get away from your desk, you know, meet some people in town that do things that are different than you. Sometimes in our field, in the field of finance, we have a little fiefdom mentality. It's like, oh, well, you're doing mm-hmm. finance, I'm doing finance, we shouldn't know each other. There's, you know, you're my competition. And I really would urge you to take that hat off. There's a catchphrase now that's really popular about the mindset of abundance. And as silly as it sounds, I really do think that there's value to that mindset, because once you start seeing that people that they have good ethics, you know, a strong sense of duty to their clients and to their colleagues, there's so much work available to them. There's so much opportunity available to them. And you can give and receive, really, there's a lot that's available. And to unlock it is really a mindset-driven move. And once you get rid of that fiefdom mentality, then you can meet folks that they're top-notch insurance providers. And you can meet folks that are in other parts of the financial field and start to really fill your database with folks that you believe in, you like them, you trust them, and you can refer to them for the benefit of the client. And you're not looking for anything in return, because what you're truly aiming for is what's best for the client. That's the only thing that is driving the train. And when that's the case, people can feel it. Your interactions are slightly different. And just at the animal level, instinctually, you're drawing more business to you because you're doing it right.
Can we dive in a little bit on that? So how has that worked over the last couple of years? So in full transparency, I think you mentioned you got, it's not just in Houston. You have some insurance only providers for annuities, life insurance across the country. So you actually have virtual access for people in different areas, right? So can you talk about how that started, where you found people that weren't necessarily just in your local community to actually work with, but also what has the result been with customers that end up moving forward with those insurance providers, but still working with you guys? So can you talk a little deeper on that too?
Sure. It's extremely organic and slow and lots of handholding. And I think that probably in general, the way that it works is we'd have a client, maybe because they were referred to us here in Houston by, let's say, a CPA. And so we've worked with them for 5, 6 years, and then they move, for whatever reason, they move to Nashville, Tennessee. We're still going to work with them. And more than likely, we even might go to Nashville and do an annual review with them face to face. And so when the advisor lands in Nashville, the 2 hours they spend with the client is just a piece of the puzzle, because they're also just going to spend that time in a way that's wise. So they might visit a B&I group or a Chamber of Commerce group. And so slowly develop some relationships, ask people like, who do you really respect in town that does this? And again, you know, what I'd said just a minute ago about just really broadening your network and making sure that you know the right people, fill the slots, make a worksheet right now with the 13 industries that you feel like most complement yours, make sure you know somebody in all of those industries. And so it's very organic, it's slow, it takes time. And as soon as somebody does something that doesn't fit our idea of ethics, you know, focus on work, then we just, okay, well, nothing against them. We just aren't going to refer to them. You know, we're going to pay attention to other folks, because there's a lot of people out there that would not make it onto our list. And that's a good thing. You know, you want to have really high standards. But when somebody deserves to be on the list, don't let your laziness stop them from being there. If all it took was to go to that breakfast business networking international meeting and you decided to sleep in and then catch the plane after your client meeting, that's a poor choice. It's going to lead to a different outcome.
Being efficient with your time. I couldn't agree more. So that, very good insight. Once again, I mean, it's interesting too, because as we were chatting on our previous call, I was not aware that y'all currently refer all that business out, which is something unique, because I know I've had some of our advisors that have started to partner with RIAs similar to the opposite of role. So y'all are referring it out. So that's why I thought, you know what? I think it'd be great to chat with you, kind of get inside the mindset of a very successful entrepreneur like yourself. And as we wrap up, is there any wisdom or advice you'd like to share here as we're slowly making our way towards the end?
I don't know if it qualifies as wisdom, but something I would love to share with all your listeners is the importance of reading. Whatever your annual goal is for professional and personal reading, consider adding to it. Add one more book to your annual goal. Double it. If you've only got one book a year, then double it to 2 books a year. And obviously, I'd love it if Outsmart the Money Magicians was one of those books, but you might consider having 2 different goals. One would be your personal books, your personal reading, and the other would be professional. And that way you make sure you're reading about finance. And even if you're not a professional in finance, money touches us all in very intimate, important ways. And to let a year go by and not read a book that touches on finance is a miss. It doesn't have to be mine. I mean, there's some famous ones out there that we all should just have already gotten under our belts. And if you'd like to get a copy of my list, I've got my mine ready to go, and I'm happy to share it with you.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. And are you old school or you do the Audible books?
I do both.
Okay. Yeah. And I'm sure, and a lot of the listeners, so we're big on the readings, a couple of the books like Atomic Habits and others that we've mentioned on the show. But sometimes being more efficient is just listening to the Audible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you're driving, when you're working out, I mean, Audible is beautiful.
Well, I appreciate your time, Chris. This has been very enlightening. Love it. Good information that you provided. Also, thank you to the listener for tuning in to this week's episode. Make sure to subscribe on your favorite listening device so you do not miss out on any future episodes. Also, follow us on LinkedIn and our YouTube page as we continue to post little snippets and clips from past episodes as advisors continue to share best practices for other advisors to learn from. But until next time, just remember, in a world full of betas, be an alpha.
Thank you for listening to the InsureMark Advisor Mentorship Podcast with Vice President Jeremy Hauser. Click the follow button to be notified when new episodes become available and connect with Jeremy on LinkedIn to stay up to date. If you would like to request our introduction kit, feel free to check out www.advisormentorship.com and click on Learn More. The information covered and posted represents the views and opinions of the guest and does not necessarily represent the views or opinions of InsureMark. The content has been made available for informational and educational purposes only. Thank you for listening to the InsureMark, the Advisor Mentorship Podcast with InsureMark Vice President Jeremy Hauser.